Hey guys, and welcome back to an episode of Comic Book Legion Podcast. I am your host, of course, Clay, but today I'm not with Mark. I'm actually with a good friend of ours from the Comic Book Legion Network. I'm here with Jake. What's up, man?
Hey Clay, how you doing today? I'm very, very excited to be here. It's been a long time coming in my mind. I've been looking forward to linking up with you guys for a while now.
Yeah, man, it's going to be really, really fun. I'm looking forward to it. We have a lot of good books this week. Loved Aquaman. I think we're going to jump on that one first. We were talking about just before we started recording, we have lots of questions with Batman and Superman this week. But hopefully we can get through it, and let's see how this goes. But before we get into the books, man, overall, since this is kind of your first time on the network, I know we've published the Game of Thrones episodes that you had up there, plus the Star Wars trailer breakdown. But let everybody know if they didn't listen to those episodes, shame on you guys. But Jake, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So yeah, me and my best friend for about 12, 13 years now, Blake, teamed up about a little over a year ago and started our own podcast, the Nerdgrounds podcast. And it all started basically doing like different scenarios, kind of like battles, not exactly like head-on-head, like one-on-one death matches. Sometimes we incorporate like random teams, and everything we do is completely random. So we just have fun with it. And lately, since we're big Game of Thrones fans, we've been recapping the Game of Thrones episodes after each night. And, you know, for the Star Wars trailer, we did a breakdown of that. Just stuff like that. We just have fun with it. Different pop culture stuff, anything you could think of, video games included, movies, comic books, TV shows, all of that. It's all good.
Yeah, I know that Blake is a pretty big gamer. Are you a gamer also?
You know what? I used to, but I have two kids now, so I don't have too much free time to play video games. I still do every once in a while, but you know, Blake's the man when it comes to video games. His review for Mortal Kombat was beautiful. It was awesome.
Yeah, man. For me, the fighting games I kind of stood back from just because I really enjoyed Injustice 2. But the community for fighting games is a little crazy, and I just can't keep up with it. So I think Injustice 2 was really my last fighting game. But I really enjoy things like God of War. Recently, I've been playing through again, because I beat it like within the week or 2 weeks that it came out. But I'm playing Spider-Man on the PS4 again.
Nice.
And I think I'm going to start Horizon Zero Dawn. I've never played that game, but it's really cheap right now, so I decided to grab it, and I'm gonna play that pretty soon. But
That looks beautiful. That game looks beautiful.
Oh yeah, like the way that just they really made that game and how it's fluid and everything. I really, really enjoy those kinds of games, so I'm looking forward to it. But go ahead. What were you saying?
No. I was just gonna say I'm an Xbox guy myself, so I haven't played any of those games that you've.
Oh man!
Unfortunately, but
see, that's what happens when you choose the wrong console.
I had serious regrets when Spider-Man came out, and I still do a little bit in the back of my mind. But I love Halo, so.
You got me there. I was a really big fan of Halo for the first three. I mean, I was a heavy gamer for the first two, for sure. But I miss some Halo, so you do have me there. I've been kind of wanting to buy an Xbox just on the side, just so that way when the next Halo comes out, I can say I can play it. But I don't know, man. It's hard to keep up, especially like you said, with growing up. I'm not going to say that, you know, growing up means you can't play video games, but it does get harder, for sure. It's the sacrifice of sleep if you really want to play.
Yeah, it's so, a weekend thing.
So, but let's go ahead and jump into Aquaman first. So, this is In the Jaws of Mother Shark, and it is written by Kelly Sue DeConnick. The art is from Victor Bogdanovic. And let me just say, there is parts of this book where I thought it was drawn by Greg Capullo.
Yeah, I got that same vibe. Some of the face shots of Aquaman, I really got, you know, some of the facial features really looked like it was a Capullo art.
I wonder if he, like, was an apprentice of his, of some sort, because his art was very much, I think there was a shot of, like, a younger Arthur as Aquaman when he's, like, starting to look into his memories. And that's the really big thing of this issue, is he visits this Mother Shark, which is a very ominous character when you first see them. You know, you don't really see their entire face. You see their tail at one point, but you don't see the whole thing until later on in the book. But it shows that this Mother Shark is basically almost Grim Reaper-esque of the ocean. And, you know, whenever somebody dies in the ocean, you know, they visit her, and she, in a weird way, consumes them to go into the afterlife. But Arthur was different, and she didn't feel that it was really his time, because the old gods were, you know, praying for somebody, a champion, a hero, or whatever. So Mother Shark, the reason why he was with the old gods in this past arc was because of Mother Shark. And let me just say, the character model for Mother Shark was, in my mind, a little disappointing. Because you see it in the cover, like these very scary jaw, like this, okay, it's a huge shark, it's going to be terrifying looking. You see the mouth at one point when he first visits her, and then when you see it, and I think it's when you see the small bubbles of flashbacks or whatever, you start to see, like, the face of the shark, and it doesn't look scary at all. It just looks like a normal shark. And
it almost reminded me of a whale.
Yeah. Yeah, it really does. Like,
you know, just...
Because right before that, you see, like, the ominous, like, back fin and tail, so you're like, oh, you know, they're trying to keep it in mystery, and you can't see the face or whatever. And then you see it, and you're just like, oh, it's... There's nothing special about that at all. But what it is showing here, like I said, is Arthur learning a little bit about his past, but in pockets. It's not sharing all of it. And it warns Arthur, hey, if you do this, just know that no one was really supposed to revisit their memories. The process could make you go crazy. He still decides to do it. And he wants to learn about Mira first. And with that, we know that if you have read... Have you read Aquaman in the New 52?
No, I have not. I was actually, like you, where my first actual time reading Aquaman was in Drowned Earth. So I remember hearing you talk about that with Mark. And that was my first taste of Aquaman myself. That was one of the ones in the New 52 that's been highly recommended, so I've been meaning to go back and read that, but I have not yet.
Yeah, so in the beginning of Geoff Johns' run on Aquaman the New 52, Mira was actually sent, I believe, and I haven't read it either, but it's on my list, and I actually own the omnibus of Geoff Johns' run. It's like the first 25 issues or so. But I'm pretty sure Mira was sent to kill him, and that's why at the very end here it says, she is your companion, your partner, your love, and your killer. And it shows her, like, somewhat, like, possessed, like, zombified at the very end. And it says next, the shocking truth. I really enjoyed this book. I love the art. Like I said, it reminds me very much of Greg Capullo's art. I love the use of color. You know, and I never really thought I could like Aquaman's art, from what I had been seeing. But I think it was back when I was working at a comic shop, when the whole Crown of Thorns was going through with Stepan Sajic. His art is absolutely amazing. I know a lot of people have started loving Aquaman because of the Middleton covers, which we see here. In the very beginning of this issue, it shows a really awesome cover with Aquaman with a trident with his new tattoos. Really, really awesome. But what were your overall thoughts, Jake?
You know what? My first take of it was I really liked the concept of Mother Shark. You know, I'm actually like, I really like history. I'm a history buff. So my first thoughts was she reminded me of, like in Greek mythology, the river Styx, which is that shot with all the, I guess you can call it the souls sinking into her mouth. And that just, that shot just kind of reminded me of the souls mm-hmm. flowing down the river Styx and, you know, Greek mythology. So that was, I kind of like that, but I agree with you. The overall design was a little bit of a letdown. But I really liked all the different shots of, you know, throughout the memories of, you know, classic Aquaman versus Black Manta. You see him fighting Ocean Master. And then, you do see the Mira, and she's being crowned. So I like that, all the different callbacks to classic moments throughout Aquaman's life. And one thing that I really enjoyed throughout it, which is something that I kind of look at when it's really good, it really amazes me, which is the lettering. And Mother Shark's speech bubbles, I don't know if you noticed, but there's like a waving pattern to all the words. It's like it kind of reminded me of someone who'd be talking underwater.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So I really enjoyed that. That was really good lettering.
I like how all of her lettering is bubbles. It's not necessarily speech bubbles, but it looks like actual, like, bubbles. And you're right, it does have like a little bit of a flow to it. So it's really, really cool there. I love the idea of the Ocean's Forest or whatever it was called, the Ocean's Hidden Forest or whatever. And my question is, with a lot of these memories that are floating around here, because, you know, you haven't read New 52, I haven't read New 52, so I wouldn't really be able to notice. But I wonder if any of these memories are something from before 52. Because I know the only characters that they've really done it with are Batman. In Rebirth, they were doing it with Superman. They've done a little bit with The Flash. But they're slowly interpreting more of the pre-52 stuff of DC's history into these characters to, quote-unquote, go back to normal. And I know they, as DC, they want to embrace everything. And so, but a lot of us readers are like, oh, but continuity, they, you know, they don't do this and they don't do that and you're supposed to be in this universe and da da da. And I know that DC wants everybody to have the best of the multiverse, not necessarily best of both worlds, but the best of the multiverse. And so I'd be really interested to see or learn if any of these pictures here are from before that. I think they are still from the New 52 run, just because the character model and the costume is very New 52-esque, so I think it's still there. But I would like to learn if they did or not. I love the Dark Knight metal reference that was in here as well. And I'm pretty sure this was also There was a Justice League tie-in with Aquaman and the New 52. I can't remember what it was, though. I think it's King of Atlantis when he first became king. And I think that's what the reference is on that panel as well. But overall, really good book. I loved it. Loved everything about it as far as letter work, art, color, writing was really, really good. But let's go ahead and jump to the next book with Batman 71. Now, this book, of course, was something that, like you and I said before we started recording, we don't really understand what is going on here. I love Andy Kubert's art on the front cover. Makes Bane look super monstrous. I always love that, kind of towering over Batman. But you did it too, but when I first read this, because of the comments that we were making in the Slack chat, I read one type of art first and then the other later. So Tom King is, of course, the writer. Mikael Janin and Jorge Fornes are the two artists. and one takes place in the now, and one takes place earlier in time. And so this is basically, like, the Jorge Fornes art is Batman in the Batcave. He gets basically a intruder notification on the Bat computer, goes upstairs, sees that it's Bane. He sees the other Batman. They're sitting at his table inside the Wayne Manor, and, like, Alfred is, like, serving food. Everything is acting normal, which I think is weird as well. But with that art, it basically shows, you know, Batman, Bruce Wayne getting super pissed, knocking everything over, and him getting the crap knocked out of him with Bane. And that's that. Small story with Fornes art, but the real juice of it is what comes from where this is all coming from, which is where Batman, I've never seen this before, but Batman turns on a red light on the Bat Signal, and pretty much that is the signal to call everyone in the Bat family. And they all get together, and it's mainly Barbara Gordon who gets everybody together, because Gordon was the one, Commissioner Gordon told Barbara, oh, that was weird, Batman put on this red signal, and blah, blah, blah. And she's like, oh, okay, well, I know what that means. And she calls everybody, they all get on the rooftops, and Bruce is basically saying, Bane is trying to control the city, nobody, you know, is trusting me on this, they think Bane is, you know, just a simple mind, blah, blah, blah. And they try to, you know, go to Arkham and fix everything, but nothing happens. We see that there's doctors that are like, what are you talking about? Of course, Batman and his team can't just go knocking around everybody. So they meet back up on a rooftop. They talk. Barbara is saying, hey, I've talked to Alfred. Nothing has changed. Like, Alfred doesn't remember anything that you're saying to us. And Tim Drake kind of gets under Batman's skin and is like,
a little bit.
And
a little bit.
And, you know, I love the art. I love where Tim Drake was getting here, but I just don't know where Tom King is, like, what he's trying to get across. Because with all of this, there's gotta be something, you know, with Barbara saying, oh, I talked to Alfred, they never saw your father, they never saw this, that, the other. Like, how is it that even the Bat family isn't recognizing everything that's going on in Gotham? Or that what everything is going on in Bruce's life? That's the really confusing thing for me.
Yeah, to be honest with you, like, this was definitely an issue that you want to read two times, you know, a second time through. And even then, like, I'm still kind of confused about what exactly is going on, because it almost makes me think, you know, is Batman still in his nightmare, or are other people in the nightmare, or, you know, what is exactly going on? Because it's super confusing. It almost made it seem like it was Bane really there with Bruce, or did he punch Alfred, or is he punching Alfred again? It almost made it seem, because it showed them, Bruce standing off with Bane, you know, just them two.
Yeah.
And then, you know, a few panels later, it just shows Bruce and Alfred. You know, it just was confusing to me. I'm not sure what exactly is going on, like you said.
Yeah, for me, as, you know, and it's really hard to think of these books because they're so connected with the Bat family. It's really hard to think these books are in their own universe. 'Cause that's what most people do. Whenever they pick a book to read, they can't afford to pick up Detective. They can't afford to pick up Batgirl and, you know, all the other character books that, you know, are in the Bat family. So they have to choose maybe one or two. And you can't just assume, oh, these are all happening at the exact same time. Because, when you see Barbara calling everybody, you see Damian Wayne fighting, I can't even remember what he was fighting. He was fighting some sort of, oh, he's Professor Pig.
That's right.
And there, I'm just like, okay, well, in Detective, he's with Batman. And I know that in Young Justice. I've never seen these samurais before, but we see Tim Drake with the Young Justice crew fighting these samurais in this panel. I'm just like, okay, well, that's new also. So it's really hard to think of Batman's book as kind of its own timeline. And so you're like, okay, where is everybody? Is he not talking to these, you know, partners that he's had over the years and, you know, asking them for help? Which is really redundant because we all know Batman doesn't like to ask for help, so that's kind of a stupid question. But it makes you wonder because of how confusing this book really is. You know, this whole dinner scene here, you know, he does, you know, Alfred calls him Master Bane at one point, and I'm very confused because I don't think Alfred would legitimately attempt to play along for, you know, Bane and, you know, this Flashpoint Batman when he knows Bruce is there in the manor, you know? So very, very confusing. I hope we get more answers before this crazy City of Bane arc happens in issue 75. I have a feeling we're not going to, but I hope that we do.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm there with you because there, like you said, this was, I mean, when I think of one word about this, it's almost confusing. I don't know. I'm sorry. We'll continue.
No, that's all good. I mean, we know as far as the Twitter community and the comics book community, there is definitely different sides of this scale whenever it comes to the Batman book with Tom King. But I have to ask, like, have you been enjoying Batman overall? Have you been reading it? Or how long have you been reading it? Or what's up?
You know what? I really actually started during the War of Jokes and Riddles. I hadn't been reading Batman. And from there, I've kind of been picking and choosing. Like the whole Nightmare arc before this one with, you know, the dinner scene, I kind of skimmed over. After I listened to you and Mark talk, and I'd kind of skim through and read here and there. So I haven't been faithfully following, but I have been reading, you know, for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
So, but still, you know, I'm not sure the direction they're going to take this. You know, what exactly, you know, what's going on with Bruce? Is he losing his mind? But because you brought up a good point, I don't think Alfred would play along and make Bruce suffer. I feel like Alfred would, you know, take a bullet before, you know, playing and being a part of Bruce's suffering.
Yeah, you know, one minor spoilers. I'm not going to say, you know, exactly what happens in the New 52, but Joker breaks into the Batcave and, like, Alfred is ready to fight. He gets a shotgun and he's, like, ready to shoot the guy. And here comes Bane and Batman. I just don't feel like Alfred would be like, oh, okay, let me play along. Like,
yeah, especially calling him Master Bane.
Yeah. So, very, very confusing. But hopefully, like I said, we get more answers before 75. So, we still have 3 more issues. So, let's go ahead and jump into Justice League number 24. Once again, one of the craziest titles that we have been reading over the past few weeks. I love this new artist that's on these B covers. I can't remember his name. Let me see if I can find the credits here for the cover. Is Jerome Opina for this second cover with the Trinity on it. Looks absolutely amazing. He did one 2 weeks ago that had the entire Justice League, and it looked great. Just love that art. But, of course, this book is written by Scott Snyder, and George Jimenez helped on the plot. The art is by George Jimenez, and Alejandro Sanchez did the colors with Tom Napoleano on the letters. The opening to this scene still breaks my heart, you know, with Snyder going back into memories of Superman with Little John and how Superman is really, really trying to do all he can to survive in this pitch black world that he's stuck in. I was expecting there to be another panel in here just because Snyder made a comment about one 2 weeks ago with like it was supposed to show Pa Kent's like him like punching and then John punching and then Superman punching, and Snyder made the comment, oh, you know, Superman is calling back to the strength of his father and his son to help him get through this. And like even that, like it was just three panels, and I was like, oh, Snyder, you're breaking my heart here. But he didn't put it in here. It probably will be in the next issue, on issue 25. But we see here the rest of the Justice League that was on Apocalypse. They actually do get they actually escape, and by the help of the older, more experienced, more beaten Legion of Doom here, with the help of Darkseid as well. But we also get a little bit more story of Batman and the Forger, and we learn that Batman is the real reason why this sixth dimension universe is the way it is. Which is a really weird turn that I was not expecting. You know, with Snyder being so famous with writing, really great Batman stories, to write him as the villain in this story is something that was completely out of, left field, but I enjoyed it. You know, I really like, you know, somebody who is unfortunately seen as the biggest name in DC, even though it should be Superman. In my opinion.
yeah.
But Batman is talking to the Forger. He learns, you know, that he was the real reason why everything is like this, because of a chair made by the Sun Box. So we have a Mother Box, we have a Father Box, and now there's a creation of the Sun Box. So I'm pretty sure there will be a Daughter Box somewhere in the future, and like a step sibling box, and
cousin box, grandma box,
a mother-in-law box, and like all those things. So, but they feel that the Justice League has escaped. And the really big thing here is that they're talking about the final bat suit, and we have no idea what that is like. But they keep talking about it, and they keep saying, you know, this is the reason why Batman was able to do so much, is because of this final bat suit. You know, thankfully we have somebody to destroy it, and that's that. And they made the comment at the very end when the Justice League confronts Forger with this, you know, sixth dimension Justice League, and they're like, oh, well, somebody, you know, destroyed the suit, so it's no problem. And Forger was like, yeah, Jaro did destroy it, which I was like,
what?
Of course they would bring back Jaro. But he said there was one person that we had that could fix it, and of course that being Batman. And we see this giant like freaking Digimon Goliath like freaking bat suit come out of nowhere and is about to fight the Justice League for the battle for the future, which is going to be next episode or the next issue. Holy crap,
like, oh my god,
when this thing came out. And a little part of me is like, okay, you know, Batman is only doing this to turn on the Forger later, but with how everything is turning out, it's really hard to see. And so I want to know, like, if this is going to affect how the Justice League functions in the future. How in the world is Superman going to get back here to save the day, kind of thing, which I hope happens, to be completely honest. But you know, it's all still up in the air, and it's really, really crazy to look at. What'd you think about it?
You know, I love this issue. I agree with you that Justice League is one of the most insane titles right now, and this is actually the book I'm doing my review on this week, so I've got my work cut out for me. This arc has just been beautiful from the very beginning. The whole sixth dimension concept, this whole peaceful utopia. And this could be a potential, you know, the only way to survive Perpetua. It's been really interesting, and the whole relationship between the World Forger and Batman, their conversation, it's really making me question whether or not Batman's really showing up at the end to go through with what the World Forger has set him up with, or if he's, because this is, like you mentioned, Snyder book, if he is actually going to, you know, because it mentioned how it has the power to change them down to their, you know, cells, you know. If he's going to maybe turn the Sixth Dimension Justice League against the World Forger, or, you know, something along the lines of using that suit against the World Forger, because, you know, it is Batman. So, I, you know, I'm really loving it. I really enjoyed the older hardened Legion of Doom helping them out when they appeared at the end of the last issue. I lost it. I thought that was amazing. I really enjoyed that moment when they said their goodbyes right before they did send them back into the Sixth Dimension through that portal. How they each got to say goodbyes to their own, you know, the rival rogue. So that was really a touching scene. I enjoyed that.
You know,
it's a really good book.
I really enjoyed it too. And I want to know if maybe knowing that there's some universe out there where the Legion of Doom is able to work with the Justice League, if the Justice League or any of the members will try to use that against the Legion of Doom once they get back to their Earth. You know, just saying, hey, you know, we just fought in this world where you helped us and we got along and we were, you know, you knew that we had to do this to save the world and blah, blah, blah. So I want to know if maybe I could see Martian Manhunter definitely going to one of these characters in their dimension and saying, hey, you know, we did this in this other dimension, but I know that you might still be capable of doing the same thing. And maybe they will be the link to defeat the Legion of Doom later on in, you know, this story, which would be kind of cool. But I really enjoyed this book. I love the color work on this. It is simply amazing. I love the vibrant colors of the Sixth Dimension. Very, very bright. I think, who was on the colors of this? I said it in the beginning, but it was Alejandro Sanchez. Yeah, he does amazing color work on the Sixth Dimension stuff. Absolutely love it. I love the design of this final bat suit. Like I said, reminds me of, like, freaking a Digimon or something. It reminds me of freaking, what is Pacific Rim? Like, one of the robots from Pacific Rim.
Oh, okay.
Also.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm really interested to see, like, I don't know if I would like if it happened, but, you know, in a weird turn, I could see Batman using this to destroy the Justice League of the Sixth Dimension. But then, you know, I feel like people would have that debate of, oh, Batman doesn't kill, and, you know, start that whole thing again. And I really don't want that to happen. it's a conversation that just, you know, needs to unfortunately die. But really, really loved it. I love the gold on the suit. Reminds me of the gold Superman suit that we saw in the beginning of this arc.
I really love that. I really love that suit.
Yeah.
That was, you know, just how the way the gold kind of had that, like, the shine, the shimmer to it.
Yeah.
Behind I don't want to say sparkle, because that just, you know. But, you know.
Twilight vibes.
Like, almost. Who are we kidding? No, but that was an awesome. I love the whole, you know, how, like you said, the entire design of it gives off this futuristic piece, like the ultimate peaceful futuristic utopia is the vibe I get from it.
Yeah, for sure. I'm not looking forward to this next book. But I know we'll have to get to it sooner or later. Let's go ahead and jump into Naomi. I know that you hadn't been reading Naomi or Superman, which we're going to be talking about next, but did you really, like, speed through 1 through 4, or did you just kind of rely on what me and Mark were saying and then read this one?
You know, I couldn't get a hold of a copy. You know, obviously, they're so hard to get a hold of, the physical copies. So I did skim through number 4. I know you and Mark talked about it. But I really just focused on reading this fifth, issue, and I really enjoyed it. I feel like I'm really missing out, and I'm definitely going to be going through and collecting a trade of this when it does come out, because I feel like I've been really missing out on some fantastic art and just a really unique original story. And the way Brian Michael Bendis was writing it was really amazing in the beginning, you know, when it shows Naomi, you know, revealing everything to her friend. I felt like that's exactly how a teenage girl in today's age would react to her best friend telling her she's a superhero, alien, you know. So I really enjoyed it, and I feel like I'm kind of kicking myself for not have been reading this.
Yeah, and, you know, this book is going to be finished off in this next issue of 6. We're reviewing issue number 5, but at the very end it does say to be concluded. So I'm pretty sure Bendis is going to be writing this in volumes by the miniseries, not necessarily by the maxi series or anything else like that. But like you said, the very beginning of the book, she does go to her friend that we were introduced to in the very beginning of this book. Her name is Anna. So she did talk to Anna throughout this whole thing. It was pretty much just like a, hey, this is what we've learned through the, you know, issues 2, 3, and 4, pretty much with what she was talking to her about. And we got to learn a little bit about her past as far as her parents, because that little black box that we saw at the end of issue 4 actually went inside of her palm when she held on to it, and it was like this weird, like, voicemail, basically, is the easiest way I can describe it as. And it's her mother, basically, in the days before she died, and telling Naomi basically everything that she was a part of, and how they are not from this earth but from a different earth, so incorporating the multiverse. And in this multiverse, the crisis that happened, you know, for us in our time in the 80s, basically hit them a lot later, and it only affected 29 people as far as, like, this mass amount of energy that, you know, normally destroyed, you know, complete Earths and universes in the multiverse, basically just radiated their planet with power and gave 29 people basically superhuman abilities. And out of those 29, they were, like, fractioned off to where some people just left, some people were killed, and this really monstrous guy that they were fighting, I forgot his name already.
Me too.
Let's see if it says it here. I know it says it somewhere in the... Right...
Zumbado.
Yes, I knew it was, like, some crazy name. So he is, like, he basically on their earth becomes a enforcer of, hey, you know, with these powers we should rule everybody. And that's where the fractioning of the heroes really comes into play. And near the end of that playback, of that message, we get to see where her and her adopted parents were at the end of the last issue, and then basically shows you how Naomi got to her friend Anna in the very beginning. And then poof, here comes Zumbado in this, you know, basically, I want to say boom tube, because that's how what we know of as far as DC fans, but this portal just coming in and saying that, you know, he's been waiting for Naomi to reveal herself, so he's probably just going to try to kill her. So I will have to admit, I did not like this book. I don't know if it's because of the, like, craziness of the writing styles of the books that we've been reading throughout this podcast, with Tom King being super confusing, or with, you know, Scott Snyder being very exposition heavy with a lot of detail. Bendis here, I know it's very informative, and I know because there is, this is a brand new character, there's a possibility of a lot of new readers reading this book, just because it was aimed as a new reader friendly and young adult friendly. So with those two, categories, there could be a lot of potential first comers for comics to read this book. So I understand that. But with the, I feel like, over explanation of the multiverse and the crisis and everything else, I had a weird feeling of being talked down on with Bendis, with him describing everything, unfortunately. So I kind of got a little bored. I felt like with the, and I don't know if it was that or the misfortunate, like, way of putting the message on the book, you know? Just because you see Jamal Campbell's awesome art. Let me just say right there, Jamal Campbell on art, I've always said, is amazing. That's one of the strongest things in this book, if not the strongest, in my opinion, is Jamal Campbell's art. So I absolutely love looking at that. But just the way they did it with the inner dialogue narrative boxes with the message, it was really hard to just, like, really get into that story. And I was more so just wanting to look at the art after, you know. And I was just like, okay, let's go ahead. I know this is important. It's supposed to be heartfelt. Okay, okay, you know, whatever. But then, you know, like I said, I really enjoyed the art on this. I love the way Jamal Campbell draws everybody, even the characters I don't like. you know, with Anna, I feel like her reaction was really silly in the beginning. I don't want to call her a dunce, but that's really how I felt in the very beginning of this book. And I'm just like, okay, you know, be a little bit more excited or terrified. You know, it's really weird that a friend would be so okay with powers. But once again, this is a world of 80 plus years of, you know, history. And so, you know, superhumans aren't very, you know, I guess,
uncommon.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, maybe that's just a nitpick on my part. Like I said, really enjoyed the art. I do like how I guess it's just the color and the art. I'm sorry. I just really love it. the way Jamal Campbell does it with the flashbacks is really, really cool. I like the vibrant colors. I know that everybody, and even me and Mark did it as well, will take every story that deals with an alien child being sent to Earth, will pretty much compare it to Superman. And you, like, I don't think Bendis is trying to create the next Superman, but it wouldn't put it past me if, you know, hey, you know, maybe I can make the next Superman type of deal. But it still, it was very heartwarming, and I understand, you know, what he's trying to get at. We still don't know too much about her powers. We made the assumption that it's, life, as far as the, spectrum of light, with the Green Lanterns and all that history. We made the assumption that that's what it's, you know, supposed to be, but with this new information, it may not be that at all. So we still need to learn about that, because even, you know, through all this, we don't know what her powers do. And so I am looking forward to seeing how this concludes, to hopefully get some more answers into that and where Naomi goes after this. We do know that there has been a, I don't know if it's a cover or just a promotional poster, but we do see Naomi with some of the characters of Young Justice. It's a picture that has been floating around in the internet, recently. So if, you know, during her time as a solo series, you know, isn't going on because it's a miniseries. If she's going to jump directly into the Young Justice story, that will be interesting.
Yeah, you know, I'm actually a sucker for a good origin story, something original and unique. So I did enjoy kind of, you know, this being my first time actually going and reading Naomi, you know, being a, you know, a pretty original, unique character was, I enjoyed that. But I kind of get what you're saying that about how the art was a lot more standout than the story itself.
Well, and I guess it
was, to me, more of just a continuation of the previous issue.
Yeah, I do see how story. I do see how if this was literally somebody's first book, how it would be awesome just because, hey, I get the origin immediately here. And then you can go back and learn everything that's been going on. So I completely understand that, and that's, you know, that's a good way of looking at it also. Because one thing that we have been wanting, me and Mark, was, okay, where is she from? Where is she from? What is she doing? You know, and it kept on alluding to all these things, and we were getting everybody else's origin and answers, but never hers. So I am glad that we finally get to see her origin. Now I would like to know a little bit more about her past, a little bit more about, you know, why did the Crisis give this world powers? What do these powers, you know, imply? And, you know, I feel like it's a little bit of a cop out for Bendis to be like, oh, 29 people specifically just got powers and nobody else did. And yeah, you know, but.
And you were the only natural born baby out of the 29 and only baby conceived out of all the 29. The rest couldn't have a kid.
Yeah, a little bit on the nose, but, you know, I feel like with what Bendis had, I feel like he couldn't necessarily just, you know, throw a whole bunch of crap out there, because it wouldn't be new reader friendly if he did. So it is a good constructed story on his part, but, you know, I did want a little bit more, and not necessarily just as a playback of history, like not like a history lesson. I want information as it's going on type thing. So
yeah, I want to know what her powers are, because she's got some like Dragon Ball Z thing going on right now. And I just want to know, you know, obviously she's going to have to do something, but I got a feeling in the back of my head when she was kind of showing off their friend, like, you know, it's never really good when a new hero shows off their powers, like it never ends well. So I kind of figured, you know, I don't want to say it was predictable, but the villain showing up at the end, I kind of saw it coming. Yeah. You know, even though it was my first time reading Naomi, I saw it coming.
Yeah, that it is a little bit of a trope that I feel like Bendis has with some of these books. Especially with this one coming up here, our next and final book of the night being Superman issue number 11, The Death to the House of El. This right here, I know that you've been listening to me and Mark, ramble about, how, we are not 100% with Bendis on the action and Superman titles, but this, I feel like, was once again a book with amazing art, with really jumbled and just all over the place writing. In here, we start off in the Phantom Zone with Rogalzar, with Zod, and with Jaxxar. Basically showing the aftermath of the fight that we never saw. Because in the other issues, when they fought, you only saw them, like basically confront each other, but you never saw the actual fight. And so this is the aftermath of it. And then it jumps into where we left off in issue number 10. Here, we see that there's all these different races fighting each other in the midst of it. Superman does see Rogalzar at one point and sees his father, Jor-El. You know, Superman and John go throughout this whole thing trying to stop it, and Superman's like, hey, you know what, I'm going to stop this whole thing without, you know, killing a single person, and, you know, we're going to do it peacefully. And, you know, he goes to every single person, you know, and tells them to please stop, which I feel like is a little bit inconsistent just because, like, some of these characters we've seen in other books, this, like, ice creature queen, I know, has been in the Supergirl book as of recently. She is not as peaceful as she is in this story. So I feel like there's a little bit of inconsistency there. And, you know, when the fight with Jor-El and, I'm not Jor-El, Rogozar and Zod come in, the big thing that I noticed is at the beginning of the book, Superman was like, oh, I hate it when there's space battles because I can't hear anything. Because technically, in space, there's no noise. But in the middle of this book, Jor-El is talking to both John and Clark, and they're acting as though they can hear each other. So that makes no sense whatsoever to me. A little bit of a inconsistency in writing. But I do notice small little things here. So when Zod is fighting John, he's not necessarily fighting him. He pushes him back and you see his hand kind of like in front of him, like, hey, hold on type of thing. But of course you can't hear what they're saying. There's no word bubbles whatsoever, but you see a face on John, you know, you see this certain face on John. And so that makes me question, okay, what is Zod planning? Zod is not the kind of person to, you know, just team up with somebody who is against Kryptonians. You know, that's not his MO. Zod is a very proud Kryptonian. He wants to make a whole new Krypton. So teaming up with Rogozar in the very beginning was something very odd to me. So I think Zod has a plan in the back of his mind to all of this. But in the midst of all this fight, the book ends with Kara and Crypto coming out of freaking nowhere. I pretty much dropped off of the Supergirl book, unfortunately. So I have no idea where she is coming from, but I do know that her big thing in her book is to find out more truth about Rogozar, to stop him and to, you know, basically confront him about, you know, destroying Krypton. So maybe her story will kind of end here, or her first, like, big arc will end in this crossover. But like I said, overall, really great art with a lot of clunky writing, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. The art was beautiful. I think there was a splash page. It's hard to tell reading on the laptop exactly how these are formatted, but it's just some beautiful art. In the very beginning, there was like two back-to-back shots. It was just... you know, the one where Superman is, you know, flying through and you first see all the commotion and the chaos surrounding Jor-El's ship. I just really loved that, the art in that. And just you could make out all the different, it almost looked like there was green Martians and yellow Martians in there. So it was just, I don't know. I really loved that, all the chaos and everything going on there. It was really beautiful at the same time as hectic. But man, this is a... I really enjoyed how he was trying to show John how to, you know, stop a fight without hurting anybody, especially in the midst of all the chaos. But yeah, I'm not sure how I felt about the ending, especially you brought up a great point I didn't really think about until you brought it up, was how, you know, I did remember when he couldn't hear anything amidst the chaos in space. And then, you know, later on, you know, they're talking to each other, kind of yelling back and forth. And, you know, that's a great point.
Yeah, just a small little plot hole and inconsistency. I know it happens all the time, but just unfortunately with the writing in this book, along with that inconsistency, it just didn't really make it for me in this issue. And let me just say, Superman is, you know, like I've said plenty of times through this podcast, Superman is my favorite character. There has been issues where I'm like, man, Bendis is a genius. And then the very next issue, I'm just like, Bendis, what are you doing? So I'm very, very wishy-washy on this run. And it kind of gets me like just flustered and frustrated just because I know reading, because I collected all of Superman Rebirth and all of Action Rebirth from issue one, or technically in Action, like 980 something. But I, or 970 something actually. But I read those consistently month by month, and they were awesome stories. I know near the tail end, I know they were a bit rushed, and so they weren't perfect stories, but they were still great stories from Peter Tomasi and Dan Juergens. So to go into this clunky mess of a book immediately after that, and it's been like almost a full year since it's happened, so... You know, since Bendis has been on the book, if not a little bit longer, and I feel like nothing has really been established. I know that he has unfortunately, in a little bit of my eyes, ruined a great character like John with making him older. I know there's a big, big following on Twitter that does not like that. But, you know, we'll see. I'm still going to give him the benefit of the doubt. If this story ends well, because the one thing that I've also heard from the guys from, the Weird Science podcast, as well as the, DC, Comic Squadcast on the Squadcast Media podcast, is that, Bendis doesn't know how to really bookend a story. He just, you know, goes straight into the other one without any, defining answers for, you know, the issue before. So I don't want to leave this arc, or, you know, I don't want to go down 20 issues with Superman still having questions from issue 7, you know? So I hope that he starts to wrap things up a bit. We learn a little bit more about these characters that we're definitely going to be seeing for a lot, you know, for longer of the story. And who knows, you know, maybe this will be the end of Jor-El, because it seems like everything is surrounding him right now. And, you know, who... Because for me, it was, you know, the whole history of Krypton was that Jor-El knew what was happening. He tried to stop it. And, you know, because of that, he sent Superman off into, you know, Earth. From what we see here and what we learn from the very beginning of this issue... Rogozar is talking to Zod and says, hey, I'll show you the real reason why Krypton was destroyed. And it seems like they're all going after Jor-El. So, you know, I think Bendis is going to try to pull this big twist that, you know, Jor-El was really the reason for Krypton's destruction, which is going to be a little weird. I hope it's not going to go into that kind of realm of things, but, you know, I'm not the one writing it, so I can't stop him.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely something, you know, like Superman mentioned himself, his half-truths and his lies are, you know, there's more to it. And he's obviously keeping, you know, there's a reason. I feel like there's more of a reason to even why there was those three different armies they're attacking than he let off.
Yeah.
And I'm very curious to see if, you know, it almost makes me think, is he secretly working with Zod, maybe? I don't know. I doubt that. Mm-hmm. But... I feel like ever since the, I think it was issue 6 where John Kent returned, I feel like there was going to be something that kind of, a big twist surrounding John at the end of this arc. So I'm wondering how that's going to play out.
Mm-hmm. Well, with that, that is the 5 books that we read this week. Jake, what would you name your top 5? You know, this, we read 5 books. In order from best, from what you thought was the best this week to the least, what would you say were your top 5?
Oh, well, number one, my favorite was Justice League. Definitely, without a doubt. That's one of my favorite titles right now. I think Justice League and Justice League Dark are probably my two favorite titles right now from DC. From there, Batman. I really enjoyed Batman. Aquaman. And then the tie for the last between Naomi and Superman, just mostly because I don't read either of them faithfully, but I'd probably give it to Naomi over Superman just for the art.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Mine would have to be Justice League number 1, just because it has been such a strong story. I will admit, though, I don't know if I said this in the beginning when we or in the middle when we were talking about it. This whole sixth dimension arc has gone on for a little bit longer than I thought it was going to. I don't know when it will conclude, but we've been on this for like since like issue 19. Issue 19 or 20. So it's surprisingly longer than I thought. But for sure, Justice League was my number one, with Aquaman being my number two, Batman number three, Naomi number four, and Superman number five. So
nice. So pretty similar.
Yeah.
Pretty similar lists.
Yeah. And for, you know, we always have a question at the end of our podcast talking about, you know, something either with in regards of the books that we're talking about or just in the news that's been coming out recently. But the my question was going to be, or well, actually, Jake, because you're new to the show, do you think you have one for this week?
Yeah, I do, and it was something that I had right after I read this book, but I want to know what the hell's going on with Batman. You know, what is really going on with Batman and the rest of, you know, Gotham and his family, because it almost, you know, someone's seeing something that's not there. So I want to know what's really going on.
Yeah, for sure. So the overall question, do you think, would be like what our assumptions would be for where Batman is at mentally, or just the overall book?
Now, where he's at mentally, is he losing his mind really, or is it just Bane playing everybody else?
Okay, so you guys heard it. Question for this week is, do you think that Batman is the one that is losing his mind, or is Bane really able to play everybody's hand like this? Which would be completely insane, you know? With the characters that we've always seen as classic Batman characters, Bane has never been shown like this before. He's never been one to really have the brains and the brawn of, you know, a type of plan like he has in this book. So, or in this series, really, because it's been since the very beginning of Rebirth. So, really, really interesting. Like I said, I hope there's answers between the next four issues before issue number 75, which starts the City of Bane, which actually plays a lot into the next Year of the Villain event, which I am also looking forward to. So, all right, we got our question. We got all our books. Jake, I just want to say thank you so much for coming in last minute. I know that Mark is having tons of fun at MegaCon right now, which I'm super jealous for. I know, for sure. but, man, I don't even know what big con I'm going to this year, really. I think for me, it would just be regular old Alamo City Comic Con, if there's anybody big enough to get me to go. But with that, guys, I want to thank you so much for listening. You can follow me at Fanboy Comics Podcast for the show that I have. Of course, you can follow my personal Twitter at Fanboy Clay. You could message the show or follow us with CB_Legion on Twitter, as well as the email being comicbooklegionpodcast@gmail.com. It's comicbooklegion@gmail.com. And then, of course, we also have a website. Just like how Jake said, he's writing the review for Justice League this week. That is comicbooklegion.com. If anyone is interested in becoming a contributor for that, please hit us up on Twitter, email us. You can also follow and message Mark, our usual host, at Mark Fossis. We will respond in a timely manner. We have drawings for the writer contributions. You know, I think it was, who won the Wonder Woman trade? Do you remember, Jake? Was it Chris?
I want to say, was it? I think so. I think it was Chris.
Yeah. And So we have a lot of goodies that we still want to give away for all of our writers. And, you know, one of the cool things about being a writer is that you get to read every book like a week in advance. So you get to know every little secret before everybody else does, which is always fun. But with that, guys, like I said, thank you so much for listening, and you guys have a good night.